Chapter 30. The next morning, Ron walked through the commuter room door, feeling like it was his. He removed the contents from the mail slot marked Managing Editor, finding it mostly consisted of releases from various college press services. There were also four articles that had been submitted for publication. He took the pile over to Peter's old wooden desk and read for hours. It was the first time since he was 13 years old that he remembered reading in such a way that he lost track of time. His previous education about the war had come from mainstream media, but this stuff was appealing. He learned about the uses of tiger cages. He learned for the first time the ghetto into which Vietnam had been transformed, and he saw the pictures of torture. The interrogation of a suspected VC sympathizer was particularly haunting. American soldiers were standing there watching the man who had been staked out on a tree. His interrogators were carving initials into his belly. Ron's hands began to quiver as contempt blasted through him like a squall. He pulled his shirt out of his pants and began to pace as he read. He compared what he was seeing to his pre-existing body of information. When he took a coffee break, the morning cafeteria laughter and conversation annoyed him with a force that turned his expression into a solid glare. He watched the middle-aged woman behind the counter with a stormy bitterness. How the fuck could anybody laugh while they were scrambling eggs when people were getting their guts carved up because they wanted their country to be left alone? He paid for his coffee and returned to the room without uttering a sound. He snarled because it was no longer empty. Without looking at whoever the person was, he headed for his desk and resumed his reading. He gulped the coffee as he read. After a few minutes, he heard a familiar voice say, "How are you, Ron?" Jade was watching him over the top of her book through a pair of pink sunglasses. Ron stammered, "I didn't see you. I gotta get more coffee before class starts." She gave him a half smile and looked back into her book. Ron felt compelled to get up and leave. The last batch of coffee was still fresh in his mind, but he liked that he had to get another one. When he got to the cafeteria line, he saw Rebecca standing there with her back towards him. He moved in behind her and said, "Hi." She seemed to turn around in a startled way. "Oh, hi, Ron. You know, I forgot to ask you for directions to your house. I thought about that." She reached into her pocketbook and came out with a map that was complete with arrows. As he looked at it, the glare disappeared from his face. He saw two small flowers that she sketched at the top of the map. A nice touch. "What are we doing tonight, Ron?" Without anything that couldn't be called a thought, he said, "How about a play?" Her face brightened. "That would be exciting. About 7 o'clock? That's fine." Once in class, Ron tried to remember what he was supposed to have read for that day. So much had happened in the last 24 hours that he didn't even blame himself for not knowing what was going on. It probably would have been better if he'd asked somebody. He certainly would look less conspicuous if he hadn't forgotten his textbook, notebook, and pen. Lashley came into the room his usual few minutes late. He was carrying his two containers of coffee, a folder of papers, his book, his coffee mug, his pipe and pouch, and a package of small cigars called Between the Acts. Ron watched the elaborate setting up routine, not caring how long it took this time. Lashley began calling names. Ron's was the second name he called. Lashley chucked his chin down, looked sternly at Ron as he returned his paper. Ron remembered it was a reaction piece he'd written about the two Greek plays they'd read. It contained a vicious and inescapable conclusion that he'd reached about Greek drama. The two plays had convinced him that the whole of it was stale, stagnant, and without excitement. He remembered ending with the idea that people should just do what they felt like doing and not spend as much time on all the complaining about what had happened to them and worrying about what would happen next. Lashley had rejected the paper and typed out a point-by-point of analysis of why it was flawed. Ron read the first reason and felt the coffee start to come up back into his throat. He choked. The coffee dribbled out the sides of his mouth and came out of his nose. He wiped his face with his sleeve and checked to see if anyone was watching. He looked at the first reason again. 1. Your inability to accept characters is the result of your inability to see anything other than as extension of yourself. After a second reading of Lashley's first reason, Ron was still asking himself, what the fuck? He was amazed. How could such a thing have happened? He didn't sound like it was true. Ron looked back at the rejected paper. 2. Learn to defend characters and artists so that you will be able to learn from them. You can never really understand what someone is saying unless you walk a mile in their shoes. He understood that one a little better, but he wasn't sure how it fit with his paper. By the time Ron looked up, Lashley was well into his second Pascal story. On this night, he claims to have seen God and begins to write these incredible visions of the smallness of things through which he views his own significance. Lashley stopped and deliberately took a deep breath. I give you all of this by way of introducing the Inferno. Ron had no idea of what Lashley was talking about. If there was a heaven and a hell, according to your own set of rules, where would you be placed in one of them? Where would you find yourself? Ron returned to his paper. 3. Your language is obvious and uncreative because you use it to serve your own ego. Ron read the line again. People were voting about whether they wanted to go to heaven or hell. He looked up at the board. 4 hells, 1 heaven. He looked down the row of people who had voted. He didn't know what they had said or how he could vote. He sure had no feelings about the issue. 4. You are hard, and language is feeling. Again, he didn't understand, but all of a sudden it was his turn to vote. Everybody likes to think of himself as good, said Ron. But lately, when I pictured heaven, I got bored. I guess I'd like to picture myself in a place with more variety. Lashley looked his student square in the face. You probably won't have a choice, he said, and moved on to the next student. Ron's mouth fell open again. The fuck did that mean? Of course he had the right to choose, and at that moment, his choice was to get out of there. There were 5 minutes left in the period. 5. You have talent, but abuse it with laziness. 6. You will have to learn to write well, or we will both be broken on the wheel of trying. 7. Of those to whom much is given, much is expected. Ron stared at the last two and read them again. They were compliments. At the bottom of the page was Lashley's handwritten note that they should get together to discuss his next attempt. When the bell sounded, Ron literally bolted from the room. Lashley followed his progress and looked down at the first girl in the first row to see if she had also caught the reaction. I guess it affected him, he said, and smiled in a way that conjured back the bed in his Manhattan apartment where he showed her what he'd written to Ron. Ron walked directly to his car, where he read his paper over. He winced at each of the numerous misspellings and grammatical errors that Lashley had painstakingly circled. He lit his cigarette and reread the list of criticisms. He sucked so hard on his cigarette that it seemed to be gone in less than 10 puffs. He took hold of his steering wheel and thought about driving home to concentrate on his date with Rebecca. "I didn't come to college just for pussy," he said out loud, and decided to go to Lashley's office. Immediately, he stopped in the cafeteria to get a container of coffee, caffeine courage, and headed up to find Lashley's office. It turned out to be in the student center, right down the hall from the radio station and the student council room. The familiarity bolstered his confidence. He knocked at the door and heard a drawling, "Come on in." Lashley was seated in back of his desk, smoking his pipe and reading his literature book. "How are you?" he drawled. Ron thought his accent sounded comical. "I'm okay, I guess. Came to talk about this paper. That is, if you can spare the time right now." Lashley looked over Ron's shoulder into the corner, and Ron realized they weren't alone in the room. "Irene, would you mind very much if I spent a few minutes talking to Ron here?" The girl looked at Ron and frowned. She gave what Warren liked to call her dirty little grin to the professor and started to leave. "I guess I'll go have lunch and go to work," she said. Lashley protested. "I thought we were having lunch together." "You're too busy," said Irene, smoothing her jeans along her hips and then picking up her purse and books. "Maybe I'll see you later," she said to Lashley as she brushed past Ron. She was a short, spongy type. Ron liked her because it was obvious that she loved to fuck. After she left, Ron again apologized for the intrusion. Lashley looked uncomfortable for a moment, said that he should not worry about it. "I'm not really sure what it is about this paper that you don't like," began Ron. "That is, aside from the grammatical mistakes and the spelling errors." "They're not really very important," said Lashley, out of the side of his mouth, while he was lighting his pipe. "Your problem is more fundamental." "What do you mean?" "It's more of a childishness that sees itself as the center of the world and is unable to admit anything except that which is feeding immediate needs." Ron's face flushed. "Where do you see anything like that in my paper?" "It's more a question of what I see in you as a result of your paper. Finally, your paper isn't very interesting because of your limited thinking patterns. The interesting question is why you've chosen to limit yourself like that." Ron was getting angry. "What do you mean, limit myself?" "You don't know how to give characters, or I suspect anything else, a chance to breathe. As a result, the things around you become earthbound." Ron was sure he hated the idea of being earthbound. He stared into Lashley's face. The guy seemed so damn sure of what he was saying. It must be the truth. He was sure that it would be useless to try to continue this discussion until he had turned in a letter-perfect paper. He wasn't sure what he believed Lashley was saying about the grammar and spelling not mattering. "I'm not really sure that I know what you're talking about, let alone have any idea how to control it or change it." "It might be that you want too much control," said Lashley. "Somehow, that seems doubtful," said Ron. He was at least sure about being out of control most of the time. "The road to self-knowledge seems to be the one you've been called to travel on." "I'm not sure what that means either." "You want instant illumination because you want to have it, but it doesn't come that way." "Well, how does it come?" The first step is to learn to get off of yourself. Nothing positive can happen until you succeed with that. And the way things stand right now, I have my doubts. Ron decided that a word of explanation was clearly in order. I've been away from school for a while. I'm just trying to get back into the swing of things. I worked at IBM until I realized that I would never be cut out for a 9-to-5 job. I wanted to do something with my life. You know, make some kind of a mark. I figured that in order to do that, what I needed was more of an education. Ron gave his face the most sincere look that he could muster. He looked Lashley straight in the face as he spoke to him. The professor relit his pipe. You won't be any more successful here than you were at IBM. You won't be any more happy anywhere else if you don't learn to stop trying to bend things to suit your own needs. Ron thought that was about the 10th time Lashley had insulted him since he'd been in the office. I don't think I'd do that. That's also part of the problem, because you do. If you can't recognize it, things will be impossible for you. Ron was totally frustrated. There didn't seem to be anything he could say to make things right with this person. And this had to be the class that he enjoyed the most. Imagine how he must be doing in his other classes. I'll redo the paper and try to keep what you said in mind. Ron wasn't even sure how to make an exit. He stared nervously at the lit book on Lashley's desk. I'll have it for you next week, he said, and started for the door. By the way, said Lashley, stopping him in his tracks, I thought one of those essays you wrote for the paper had some good points and showed promise. Which one? Said Ron, turning around and being more than willing to discuss something that he'd done right, something that didn't make him feel like a total baboon. I don't actually remember if it was yours or someone else's. Besides, you really don't need the praise. He looked at Ron with the same stern expression that he'd given him when he returned his paper. Ron came away from Lashley's office desperate for an outlet. He found a ping-pong game and slammed at the ball for the next 90 minutes, playing and replaying the conversation in his mind. He tried to pay close attention to everything Lashley had told him. He came to the conclusion that he'd finally met someone who knew what was wrong with him, but wondered if all this was so visible to the outside world. Was he a glass door that could be opened, closed, or looked through at the discretion of the user? Fuck that, he thought as he won another game. He didn't want anyone walking on him, but the more he thought about Lashley's conversations, the more he saw his life as a string of carelessly done papers. When he went home, he called Hank, but there was no answer. He decided it was time to pick up a new pair of glasses that his mother had been reminding him about. Octagon-shaped steel frames with brown tinted lenses. Before he left the house again, he went up to see his aunt. He knocked, but there wasn't any answer. He opened the door and entered the apartment. She was laying propped on a pile of pillows that was bigger than she was. She seemed to be sitting up, but she had taken her teeth out, and it gave her face a sunken, death-like look. He stepped closer anxiously, then relaxed with the sound of her sleepy breathing. On his way out, he stopped in the kitchen. Dottie opened one eye and watched him grab two of her Malamores. She knew that he had another box, but it galled her when somebody depleted supply of the only food that she still enjoyed eating. After he left, she got up and took a 20 out of her drawer, and along with an envelope on which she wrote out his name in her finest script. She studied her writing skeptically. It was shakier than it had ever been before. She would give him the $20 whenever he came back up. She lit a cigarette. It burned its way down her throat like charcoal. She took her head and said, "What a way to go." then took another puff. The glasses cut into the back of his ears, but he liked them. The tints would give the world a more removed look, and he enjoyed the way the brown blended in with his hair and made him look weird. He ran his mind over what he knew of Rebecca's body like a hot-to-trot butterfly. He wondered what she would have to say about his glasses. He brushed his teeth for the third time since he'd been in the bathroom. He decided that his face had definitely changed. It was more than just the glasses. It had something to do with the structure of his jaw and the area surrounding his eyes. The name of the play he'd chosen was Endgame. Ron saw that it was written by a guy named Beckett. Ron made the connection between the movie Beckett and the guy who'd written the play. It was in the way that he told his aunt about it before he left to pick up Rebecca. She said that she didn't know anything about the play and hoped that he had a good time. "I think I will," he answered quickly. "This girl is really something special." "Don't fall head over heels, or else you'll never get her. You gotta let a girl do a little work before she lands you, or else she'll never appreciate you." She eyed him and wondered what a young man his age must feel like before a first date. Her mind skipped to Mickey Delmont and how strong he looked when he'd showed up at her house. Of course, her father threw him out, but he was Italian and expected her father to throw him out. She got fluttery, thinking about all the excitement she caused. Her sisters told her that he was handsome and started calling her Dorothy Delmont when nobody else was around. She looked at Ron and, for a second, overlaid the image of his father, shaking his fist on the porch and shouting that if that Dago ever came back on his block, he would break a railroad tie over his back. "Treat her to something after the show," she said, handing him the envelope. "Don't be cheap with this, and buy me a pack of butts once in a while." Ron took the envelope and smiled at the way his name was written across it. "You have the best handwriting of anybody I've ever seen," he said. She waved her hand at him. "It's nothing but scribble anymore." They put their arms around each other and hugged for a brief instant. Without knowing it, Ron shared a feeling of many men before him. He was just feeling that he'd gotten hold of her, and she was pulling away. "Are you taking her in that beat-up wreck?" "Yeah, I am," Ann thought. He put his head down at the memory of her opinion of his kicked-in-the-ass buggy. "She must be desperate," Dottie laughed. "I'm sure she isn't, but I might be," he said happily as he headed for the door. She tried to conjure back their image of Mike Delmont, but her mind tracked before her, calling forth the picture of a blind old man living in a basement in East Orange. "Nuts to that," she said, and turned on the TV news. While he was driving to Rebecca's house, Ron tried to figure out how he could start seeing things other than as an extension of himself. He couldn't figure out how to begin to, or what things he actually saw as an extension of himself. He concentrated on Rebecca, but decided there was no way that he saw her as an extension of himself. He would like to see her at the end of his extended cock, but that was about the size of it. Still, he hoped that she had a good time at the end of his cock. He tried not to think about Jade. Right there was an example of him taking other people's feelings into account. He resolved to forget about the whole Lashley thing and just pay attention to the evening. He left himself 45 minutes to get to her house, and the ride had taken just under a half an hour. He drove past her white house with green shingles. He tried to figure out what to do for 15 minutes. He checked his gas gauge and saw that he was okay for the evening. He heard the time on the radio. There would be just enough time to drive over to the college, turn around, and drive back. At least it would give him a sense of destination. If Lashley thinks I'm going to sit back and take it, he's out of his mind. There was no way he could do that, even if he wanted to. He didn't understand how people could ever do nothing about a thing, why people like Hank allowed others to shit on them without making a sound. Ron wondered if Hank saw himself as someone who other people shit on. "No," said Ron out loud, "he only gets laid 6 times a day. How would he know if other people shit on him?" Ron laughed with delightful envy. Whenever he pictured Joe Lee, he saw that long mouth and the way she rubbed her hands against her thighs inside of her apron. Butchie always said that her stache probably stunk anyway. He'd preface the remark by saying, "Now I ain't saying that my old lady don't get them fishy odors too. The cleanest snatch gotta get fishy occasionally. What I mean is being downward from skunk." Ron laughed and shoved Butchie out of his head. "At least," he said out loud again, "I'll never be that bad." Then he told himself that Butchie was sick and stupid, and he himself wasn't too bright for wasting his time with this while he was on his way to Rebecca's house. He was less than 5 minutes early and decided to check himself in the mirror and go in. A doe-fleshed woman in a flowered kimono opened the door and invited him in. She led him into the kitchen. Stuffed animal heads looked out from the walls. There must have been 20 of them. He looked away and glanced involuntarily at the enormous sway of the kimono's hips as he followed her through the hall. The male members of the Ranella family confronted him in the kitchen. Mr. Ranelli and his son Chuck wore work pants and t-shirts. They smiled at the four-eyed freak with the funny glasses. The youngest Ranelli wasn't wearing a shirt. He looked up from his 8th grade science book when the visitor came in. "This is my husband," said the kimono. Mr. Ranelli was a small man. Ron realized how much taller he was than anybody else in the room when Rebecca's father stood up. "How are you?" "I'm a butcher," said Ranelli. "This is Becky's brother Chuck," continued the kimono. "How are you doing?" said Ron, nodding. "And this is Robert," said the kimono, in a tone that wanted to jump for joy. Robert stuck up his hand without looking up for the book and continued to read. "How you doing?" said Ron, waving at him. "Robert, where are your manners?" shouted the kimono. She was always embarrassed when he acted like this. "I'm reading," said the kid. "Don't ever let me hear you say that to your mother again," said Mr. Ranelli, with a look that froze Robert in his tracks. "Not while I'm here." Robert sat with his head down and now closed the book in front of him. "Do you hear me?" demanded Ranelli, rising and taking a step in the direction of his son. "I'm sorry," said Robert quickly. Rebecca came into the room as the kimono said, "You shouldn't talk that way to him in front of strangers." Ron watched with the guilty feeling that he had somehow caused the kid's trouble. Then he saw Rebecca. She was dazzling. They said hello, and Ron found that he was unable to take his eyes off her. The kimono smiled when she saw the way the boy looked at her daughter. She asked Ron, "Where are the two of you going?" "To see a play in East Orange." "Parts of that city are a real jungle," said Mr. Ranelli. Then he turned to his daughter. "What time are you coming home?" Rebecca blushed and said that she didn't know. "Just have a good time and try not to be too late." She nodded to Rebecca, who seemed to understand that it was okay to leave now. In the dark, Ron could hardly see the battered backside of his car, and he was hoping that Rebecca didn't notice it right away either. She said, "Hope my family wasn't too strange for you." He shook his head, and she smiled at him in a delighted way. Ron thought that this was going to be one of the best evenings of his life. He handed her his second map of the evening. This one explains how to get to the Cafe Theater. He kept the conversation light and topical while he put his arm around her shoulder. She had no obvious reaction, let it stay there, moving closer under its circle. She told him that this was a wonderful idea for something to do.